Hello, you're listening to Talking Shiitake on the podcast network with Christian Turner and Katie Nelson. Enjoy this show as it travels deep into the expanse of your mind and your emotions, and you'll find things about yourself that you knew not possible, that you knew were not there. Your relatives, your friends, your family will be surprised by the amazing assumptions that they carried about you. Find them also on the internet, on Facebook, Twitter, and some rather scandalous sites as well.
Another wonderful edition of Talking Shiitake. I'm Christian.
And I'm Katie.
And we're going to expand your minds tonight, today.
Are we? Or at least attempt to.
Yes, we are going to attempt to, if we have that kind of power.
Oh, we got the power.
I got the power. Feel like a song coming on, but I will not
right,
sing.
Yeah, I'm not going to break out into song on that one.
First, we want to mention, don't forget to comment on Facebook and Twitter. Get on there. Tell us what you think. Tell us if we're wrong. We don't mind hearing if we're right also.
But that's right.
Say whatever you want to.
Compliments are welcome.
Yeah. And we'll start posting more and more posts related to the topics we're talking about on Talking Shiitake.
More information and resources.
Yes, because we do want you to go out there and learn about the information for yourself. We'll talk about it, but We like everybody to kind of learn it in their own way and find what's important to them.
Well, and I think that's what it is, too. We're not trying to convince anybody to believe like us. We just want people to think for themselves and do the research for themselves.
Which is kind of funny because we were going to talk about, with our conspiracy of the week, MK Ultra.
MK Ultra, what is that, Christian?
MK Ultra is totally about keeping people from thinking for themselves. It's basically a mind control program that the CIA set up starting in the 50s, but it kind of went on to there. It was officially disbanded in 1973 by the Church Commission.
Or was it?
There's probably The Men Who Stare at Goats is a little bit related to that. It's a movie and a book. John Ronson,
Jacob's
Clooney.
Ladder, right?
Jacob's Ladder, exactly.
Was really into the whole mind control thing and using it for warfare anyway.
I have watched that movie a few times and I still don't get it.
It's pretty good though.
Yes. I think it controls your mind while you're watching it.
Oh, maybe it does.
So when they started it, They wanted to experiment and figure out how to control people's minds. Now, of course, I'm sure it was set up to control foreign governments and their subjects' minds, like the Soviet Union at that time, later on Cuba, or plenty of African puppet governments that were going on at the time.
Now, when we say mind control, are we talking about controlling their behavior as well, or just the way people think?
I think it was a little bit of everything. I would say that I think if you start studying it, you're going to find correlations even in today's society with how our news is given to us from places like CNN or Fox News, where we're basically given the information that helps us think a certain way and focus on certain things and ignore different things, live in fear in a way. But at the outset, there were experiments that had to deal with LSD. There was a famous incident where they had fed, the CIA had somehow given one of their scientists a dose of LSD without him knowing it. And in the end, he ended up jumping out of a building and basically committing suicide, but he was kind of out of his mind at the time.
Interesting.
So.
Well, it's interesting because the effects of LSD supposedly are, they really affect your frontal lobes. So this is where it becomes, your rational thought is right. Now not necessarily there. Or is it the fact that there's a certain, there's a sensor in your brain that allows you not to receive all the information at one time. Otherwise, you would go crazy. So there's certain barriers that are within your brain, inhibitors, that keep you from being oversensitized, I guess. Does that make sense?
Right.
So when you take things like LSD or ayahuasca or some of these other chemicals, these barriers tend to diminish. Therefore, you're receiving this information and it's bombarding your brain and it's hard to tell what's real and what's not. And at that time, supposedly, you're the most vulnerable. And this is the time where people tend to brainwash you. This is the same process that Charles Manson used to brainwash his family.
And for those that don't know too much about Charles Manson, which is hard to imagine, but I'm sure there's some.
I know.
What can you tell us about Charles Manson and his family?
Oh, my goodness. Well, his cult family, anyway. It was in the 60s, and people were looking for something different. You know, they were against the establishment. They wanted to do something different, and there was a certain vulnerability for our youth. And Charles Manson, being the kind of psychopath that he was, and he really was just kind of off,
yes.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah, he grew up in an environment, his mother was a prostitute, and he was in and out of jail for 60% of his entire life before he even formed the Manson family
right.
For all different crimes. So he was already a criminal, and he sort of saw this almost like as a prey. And these hippies that were looking for something new and different, and he sort of used that vulnerability to his advantage to start what he considered to be the next war, or what he called Helter Skelter.
Yeah.
Helter Skelter was the war against the whites and the blacks. And when the black supposedly were going to rise up and defeat the white race, then their Manson family, who was hidden in the desert the whole time, would come out and say, "We can help you," because obviously the black people couldn't run the country, so Manson would come out and save him. That's really what his philosophy was, as crazy and twisted as that was. Well, it wasn't happening fast enough, so he decided to have his cult go out and create these murders, like the Tate murders and the LaBianca murders. And he wrote, that's why he has like pigs and stuff on the wall written in blood, because he was trying to blame it on the Black Panthers. So he figured if he blamed it on the Black Panthers, that would stimulate the race, because it wasn't the race war, because it wasn't happening fast enough.
Which a lot of people could probably go into a totally different conspiracy on misinformation and disinformation in that time, and maybe connect it to say, maybe Charles Manson was part of that whole project, like you're saying, and they connected to Jim Jones, who, mm-hmm. Basically with his cult. They basically all committed suicide, and this was back in the 70s. That's one of the first images I ever remember seeing on the news, were hundreds of dead bodies that were on, I think it was ABC News.
It was insanely disgusting. I mean, it's not like some Nike cult waiting for a comet and you got like a handful of people. This was like 990 people that were like just took the Kool-Aid and are laying there, and they're all bloated from taking the cyanide. Was it cyanide?
It was cyanide.
Yeah, cyanide in the Kool-Aid, and their stomachs were bloated out, and you're talking nearly 1,000 people laying in the Guiana in this hot sun, and they're just like, oh my gosh, what a horrific sight that was.
Yeah, I think I was it was before I was 10 years old, so it was pretty crazy, but I still remember seeing it, and you know,
think, what are these people thinking, though? You know what I mean? And they even had trials throughout the time when Jim Jones would say, okay, here's the tea or the Kool-Aid or whatever he was giving them at the time. And he would say, okay, you don't know. This could be the time. And then everybody would drink it, and then they wouldn't die.
Right.
So there were even, like, pre-trial runs of the suicide. So they knew what they were getting into. And you think, why would people do this? Did they really believe that much in Jim Jones, that he's the next Messiah, or that he's this salvation or something? This is us looking for salvation outside of ourselves once again. And it's just not it. That's not right.
Yeah, and I know, and where they connect that to MK Ultras, some people thought Jim Jones was basically one of the people that were led to be an experimenter in this.
Interesting.
So, and he obviously died, so you can say that he maybe didn't know what was going on, but there were people that, with supposedly within his group, that were connected and feeding him information and feeding him different kinds of mind-altering drugs and ways of manipulating the mind.
Makes sense. Yeah, you understand what's going on. That's right, true.
To see if he could lead these people to do something like that. And it's similar to what Manson did. None of us would have ever believed that a simple man, a crazy criminal like Manson, could pull off something like that, where he could basically brainwash people that, and some of them were, you know, they weren't people you just find out on the street. Some of these people were pretty smart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
Patricia Krenwinkel and what's the other gal's name? Linda Kasabian. And both of them were, they came from fairly affluent families.
Right.
These weren't just, bums on the street. These were pretty smart girls, you would think,
right,
that really had a lot of potential to be something really great in their lives, that followed this guy and went out and murdered people because he told them to.
Yeah. And
that's some crazy brainwashing.
The Manson family and Charles Manson hung out with some pretty famous people. And
That's how he knew Sharon Tate's house is right. Because he was there with the drummer of the Beach Boys, Brian Wilson.
Yeah.
And he actually was hanging out there. They had a side house, and he had been there a couple times. That's really the only reason, I guess, he chose that house, according to Vincent Bugliosi, the lawyer. And he said that he just knew the layout of the house. It really had nothing to do with Sharon Tate. She just happened to, him, her, and Polanski just happened to be renting the house at the time.
Yeah, it's such a crazy happening, and it's that was such an interesting time, and not always in a good way, the 60s and 70s. And It was not your normal Apple, Google type world that we have now.
That's true. And it created a lot of fear, though. I remember, right. My mom was here at the time and in California and living not too far from apparently where the family was. And she told me one time when I asked her some questions about it. I go, "You ever heard of Manson?" When I was a kid, just learning about it myself. And she was saying, "Oh my gosh, they stapled this pregnant woman to the ceiling," and they did. So yeah. She even had these rumors in her head that she had heard just from the times. There was so much fear installed in the communities at the time, and you wonder, my gosh, like it's almost like a form of terrorism. It really is.
Yeah, and that's a whole the fear that caused, and that we still deal with, based on incidents like that, is a totally, that could be another podcast in itself.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But I can also, when I was in high school, some of my friends and I would go, how when you find some place to go hang out with your friends, sometimes drinking and stuff like that. Not that we always do that in high school, but there's actually a place in Palmdale, California, that was supposed to be one of the houses that Manson stayed at.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so if this is true, and it came from a lot of different ways, I don't know if it's urban legend or just myth or whatever, but I mean, it wasn't anything, that house didn't look like any different. It was, hadn't been used in years. So it was kind of like the husk of a house and nothing special, but that would be the talk everybody would go on about. Oh, we went to Charles Manson's house, and it was kind of creepy, but there was nothing crazy about it, nothing that stuck out. It just looked like an abandoned house that had been abandoned for like 20 years at that point. And this is in the 80s, toward the end of the 80s. So weird connections. But
yeah, and it's funny how the different generations adapt to the stories and the myths, and because it was such a crazy thing to happen. And for our minds to process it, this is kind of the way we process it.
I always love that time period. Anywhere from the end of World War II up until the end of the 80s is just filled with all kinds of craziness and doubt and myths and potential conspiracies. You go back to MK Ultra and how it kind of began. A lot of people recognize at the end of World War II Operation Paperclip, where we brought over and this is something the U.S. and the Russians did at the end of World War II. There was a race to get as many Nazi scientists under their control as they could. Operation Paperclip was the basically what it was called in the U.S. And we would go in, and every Nazi scientist we came across or that we negotiated with, we would take them over to the United States or other countries, but we kept them under our control and used what they knew to advance, in this case, science.
Operation, interesting.
Some of those Operation Paperclip scientists went on to develop our space program, got us to the moon. Werner von Braun, who if you could probably YouTube it, he actually had an episode on the Wonderful World of Disney that was a famous show back in the, I think it was the 60s and 70s, where he talked about...
Von Braun did?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
And he you can see him sitting there. He's sitting there talking to all of us kids at the time, basically, because that's what mainly watched the Wonderful World of Disney, and telling us how he got us to, how he helped develop the space program and get us to the moon. But...
So are we saying that Disney was controlled by Nazis?
No, nothing like that. I think he was just became famous because of his, at that point, once we made it to the moon, anybody that had anything to do with the moon.
Right.
Was amazing.
We're superstars, yeah.
And we were able, we'd had enough distance at that point where we could put him in public and hopefully not have him connected to the Nazis.
But he was, but that wasn't public knowledge at the time?
It was there. It was just not talked about much. I mean, that was one of, they almost didn't let him work in the space program because of some of his Nazi connections. And he wasn't involved in killing anybody in the concentration camps, from what we know. He did, when he made what was the V-2 rocket, that was really a big technological advance for the Nazis, the first jet-powered rocket that they would launch, and it would make it to England. That's the technology that he took to the United States and kept pushing it to the point where we finally got to the moon. And we also now have missiles that, intercontinental missiles that we could launch nuclear weapon from somewhere in the United States, and it can get to any of our enemies in a matter of minutes.
So, that's pretty crazy.
So
I can't help but think, though, that as far as the mind control and the human behavior side of it, if some of the experiments that were done in these concentration camps were not some of the information that they were using from these Nazi scientists later on.
Yeah, one of the things that they talk about is with MK Ultra, some of those scientists that we recruited from Nazi Germany had studied torture and brainwashing.
Right, and where did they study those?
Yes, exactly. What they were.
So we're using the result of the information that they received from torturing the people in the concentration camps, and our government is paying these people. I mean, some part of that just doesn't seem right.
It doesn't seem right, but also, you expect your government to gain as much information and knowledge as they can. Even some of these scientists were prosecuted as war criminals during the Nuremberg trials. They had obviously had not been considered murderers in the general sense that some of the other leaders in Nazi Germany that were prosecuted in the Nuremberg trials and ended up being put to death. They weren't at that level.
I see.
But they were war criminals, and they used that knowledge that they gained in concentration camps, basically...
Our advancement.
Right.
And, you know, by any means necessary, though, really? I mean, I don't know. It just seems like there's something wrong with it, that you shouldn't be using that information. But then again, if the knowledge is there, should you sweep it under the carpet just because of where it came from?
I think that's where we have to maybe look in the mirrors as citizens and decide what we really want to be known for. This argument just came up in the last 10, 15 years with, you know, the whole... waterboarding and torture.
Good point.
It's still a big part of our society. And during that time, after 9/11, I think you heard a lot of sentiment that was any means necessary.
That's true.
And I think lately we've kind of gotten away from that because we're just tired of war and what it brings. But it shows you even now.
Bunch of tree huggers.
Yeah, exactly. when we think we're more enlightened and smarter, it's really easy for that fear to come in and lead us to think that we can could torture people in ways that were probably learned in Nazi Germany and used in many different places after that, places we would not be proud to be involved in. So that's part of our past, and should it be part of our future? I think that's what everybody needs to look at. Is it okay for something like MK Ultra to be around? Not that it's around anymore, allegedly. But
allegedly. Do you think that there's any type of mind control going on within our government as far as for warfare or for anything, really?
Well, there's a whole division in the military called PSYOPs that basically is about controlling the minds of the enemy or mm-hmm. or the people. And that, in a lot of ways, those are a lot of great men and women doing amazing things psychologically that could be part of our government. Now, are they doing it all for bad, or are they doing it to protect the country? I think the soldiers are doing it to protect the country.
Well, and I think that a lot of times look at Einstein, right? Brilliant mind, created the atom bomb, but did he do it for bad? You know, I mean, he regretted ever giving that.
Yeah, so did Oppenheimer after it was used. He could not believe that he had unleashed that on the world.
So this leads me to believe that we can't handle the information because we're only going to use it just to destroy each other. And it's actually, and this is kind of off topic, but I'll just throw this out there, is that what they claim happened to the Atlanteans from Atlantis, that they had the technology, but they didn't use it the right way. And they ended up destroying each other. And it's what happened. And it's almost like we're reliving it.
But who gets to control that information if we make the statement we're not able to handle it?
Mm-hmm.
Who among us is able to handle that information?
And that's where they say the Illuminati comes in, the elite of the elite actually handle that information, because they know that if it gets out to the general public, we're going to destroy each other. So are they protecting us? Are they protecting us from the truth? Or are they hiding the truth from us? See, that's where I'm at.
I think it's easy to see that if there were an Illuminati controlling all of this information and protecting us from the truth, then I think they got it wrong, because there's the powers that be in every powerful nation in this world throughout history has done it wrong at some point. They may start off with these grand ideas,
intentions.
You know, and but it somewhere along the line, basically because of human frailties or weaknesses or just normal human actions, it goes off the rails a little bit. Mm-hmm. So you got those watchmen, who's watching the watchmen? It's a famous quote. I think it first came about back in the Roman days. It was graffiti on the walls. You know, you have the watchmen watching us, but who's watching them to make sure they're doing right?
That's it.
But I tend to think, in my kind of Pollyanna, optimist way, that if humans as a group have get rid of some of that fear, they tend to work together. We're social creatures that want to work together. And somewhere along the line, you get some artificial influences that tell you that person's skin is different than yours. Their hair is a different color. They come from the wrong side of the tracks. There's some artificial addition that makes us think we're these angry, aggressive, fighting creatures when we're not.
And that comes from the mind manipulation.
Exactly.
Whether it's through the brainwashing of our media or just being told through a belief system or just passed down through generation to generation, we're being told these things. And it's not something that you're born with. It's something that you become indoctrinated with.
Right.
Because it's just the way it's always been. And this has just been passed down and passed down. And then we tend to take on these beliefs and then we instill them in our children. And there's a whole brainwashing that's beyond just our day-to-day.
Right. It's not really a weakness. It's a part of our DNA that has made us survive all these years. But do we need to survive the same way we did 10,000 years ago, 1,000 years ago.
I don't think so. And I think we're getting to the point where we actually are able, and I think there's some information that is being released now because of the fact that we are evolving.
Some people will tell you that we're not. I mean, there's a lot of people you and I both know that will tell you how violent this world is, how evil liberals and conservatives, Democrats and Republicans are, and how the Russia is going to take over the world, and China is going to liquidate all our assets, and Iran is going to bring about the rise of the Mahdi and destroy the rest of us non-practicing Muslims.
Do you really think though that the world is more violent now than it was in the Middle Ages?
I think this is the least violent time since maybe the hunter-gatherer days.
And even then, I think it was pretty violent.
There's a lot of new studies coming out to say maybe it's not as violent as we thought it was because...
Well, I think there was less population.
Right, and there were more resources. And a lot of the studies have shown throughout history that when the war breaks out or violence breaks out, it tends to be because of some kind of scarcity, no matter where they're at. It could be a famine or a drought. There's scarcity. So,
but it's not always the lacking of the resource. Sometimes it's just the perception of the lacking of the resource.
Right. There's that one trickster that comes in and says, hey,
exactly.
The tribe right across the way has more water and mangoes than we do. We're going to die if we don't get that water and mangoes. And then there's always somebody, and we don't want to hurt them. My sister and my brother are married into that tribe. They're happy over there, but they're like, they left us and we need to survive. We need what they have to survive.
So then you feel lacking, you feel less than. And once we have that competitive type of need for survival, then that's when war breaks out, whether it's tribal or it's nuclear.
Right. And again, it's fear-based.
It's all fear-based. So then I guess the question would be, how do we transcend that fear?
I think the only way is to really start realizing there's not much of a difference, and it's been proven over and over again. When the wall fell in Berlin, we started realizing that a lot of those communists weren't really any different than us. They just had a different political system, and they struggled and suffered just like any of us do.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
because at the core of it, we're all human,
right? And
or at least most of us.
Yeah, some of us don't act like it. But it's
there may be some extraterrestrial type beings or interdimensional beings out there, but that's another podcast.
Yes, star children, all kinds of crazy stuff. But it's hard to say right now. I know everybody is all riled up with this kind of hatred for the opposing side in the United States. It is a conservative liberal issue or a Republican and Democrat, and it's kind of ridiculous. Nobody is going to try to control one side that much. Maybe a couple people have this idea about controlling their enemies a little bit, but for the most part, the rest of us, we have to go to work.
Mm-hmm.
We have to take care of our kids and our families, and every once in a while we like to go out and watch a movie or, you know, watch a great TV show or play hockey. I mean, we don't have time to really hate people, but somehow, and it might be something interesting to follow from the MKUltra days to our television days,
mm-hmm.
radio, all this kind of fear-mongering that we've had since 2001. That was actually there before that, but it really took another step
mm-hmm.
That probably hadn't been seen since the height of the Cold War. And now we're stuck. I think, and hopefully temporarily, I think it is getting better, and I think that's why it's so aggressive right now. There's so much hate, so-called hatred, or it seems to be hatred toward each side. I think those are like the last of a thrashing monster trying to hold on to life.
Well, and I think it's just like what you said about the guy who comes over and says, we don't have enough water and mangoes. That's the person, that distributor of that information. That's where we need to look at. Where does our information come from? How do you know that we need the water and mangoes? We're not asking the questions. We're buying into the information because we're being told by what we consider to be a reliable source. But then we just, hey, we just listen to them and we just follow what they say.
Right.
Where is this person getting the information? You control the information, you control the people, right?
Right.
So if you follow the money and follow the information, you're going to find out what's the truth behind it. So when we have that person that's spreading these little things, that's the person that we need to look at, because that's the person who's keeping things divided. In war, you divide and conquer. You don't want humanity to be united, because you can't control them if humanity is united. So you keep everybody divided. And those little people that are spreading the fact that they need water and mangoes all over the world and causing that friction, they're doing that on purpose. And we're buying into it. So the only way I feel that we can break through it is to follow the information. Where is it coming from? Really research where it's coming from.
Well, let's say... Since we have such busy lives, we may not have time to follow that information.
That's
so
true.
So if you don't have the time because you're doing what you need to do in life, and let's face it, sometimes when I have some downtime, I want to read a book or watch a movie or just talk to friends. I don't want to go looking in all these nefarious
That's true. So-called That's not things. Everybody wants to research that. That's right.
Right. So if you don't make that a priority, I think the one way you can get past that is just stop believing the scary stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's because it's not as scary as it sounds.
There's going to be evil there. There has to be evil in this world, because there's a contrast. There's a polarity. We live within it. We have to have it in order for us to live within a free will environment.
Right.
And if you get it on that level where, okay, that has to exist, but you look deep down inside, you don't want to do the research, you don't want to go online, you don't want to read the books. If you just turn inward even for 5 minutes and say, does this make sense? And even just say, hey, why would I hate that person?
Yeah.
Does that person do anything to me? Like, look within your heart, turn inward then, and feel the information, and you'll know. You can sense. We all have very good BS meters as humans. That's the one thing that we don't practice or advance. You know, we don't practice enough with our BS meters.
Right.
You know, we have a great intuition. That's the word I'm looking for. We have an intuition that you can use. It's a monitor within yourself. It's a great gift that we've been given, and we hardly ever use it.
Right. Or we don't realize we're using it, and we don't listen to it.
There you go. We don't listen to it. Because it's working. You're right.
Now, how many times, this is a great thing, when you compare either being a parent or when you were a child and you were afraid of the boogeyman under the bed or the one in the closet, depending on which one you were stuck with. I had both at some point in my life.
Right.
But and your parents come in and tell you, there's no monster. Don't worry about it. It's all make-believe.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually you learn it's all make-believe. And maybe that's where we need to deal with the fear that sometimes the fear that sells on TV or, you know, in the media. It's just somebody making a profit, because it's a basic human need is to fear. And we don't have that much to fear anymore, so we make stuff up. We don't have that lion on the Serengeti plains looking for you.
It's a good point.
You know, we don't have to worry about that very much. Not in this country. And in many other countries, it's different. I mean, you can go to some countries and a terrorist group will kidnap hundreds of girls and threaten to sell them into slavery. I mean, that's different than what you and I have to deal with daily. And we shouldn't lessen and say that everybody has it as easy as we do, because a lot of people don't. A lot of people in this country are suffering more than I think I ever will or that I ever have. And that's real. But the fear that we're dealing with is... the majority of us is not on that level. It's make believe. It's the same thing that I watch every Sunday on The Walking Dead. It's make believe.
Well, and that kind of brings it around to prior to the television and media, we had our belief system that was put in place, where you be good, or you're going to heaven; you be bad, you're going to hell.
Right.
You know, that whole fear-based mentality has gone on for as long as our written word.
Right. It's different in different places based on the religion. Our religion, basically Christianity in this country, is what we tend to focus on a lot. But they all have their myths or their beliefs that are fear-based. And
we can get into that a little more in depth in another podcast, but right. When you get down to it, all the information comes from basically the same source. And when you look at it that way, it's even more scary.
Right. And it's all fear-based. If we can find a way to overcome the fear of the boogeyman, we'll be okay. I mean, because in the end, we're going to die. We're not getting out of here alive.
Right. You're not getting out alive. So if you can just find that peace within yourself and live within that joy and understand that, you know, things are going to happen and you're going to be affected by it. But if we turn to that inward peace, understanding that we're all part of this, we're all in this together, and that there's no reason to hate your neighbor. And if they're doing something horrible, well, you know what? Whatever their path is, that's their path, and you got to respect that.
Right.
And if they do something horrible to you, well, then you learn from it and you move on. There's no reason for the hatred.
Right. And then if they do, if they're breaking into your house and going to cause damage or harm to you,
I mean, you got to protect your family. Yeah. I mean, you got to do what you got to do. But to live your life in fear.
Right. Yeah. It's just
then you're losing the quality of what you're living.
And I think we've all been to a place where we've lived our life in fear, and fear is something that we need. It's just overblown to the point where we have to either go to a doctor and medicate, or we have to self-medicate.
Yeah.
And that's where maybe we need to start getting into a good place and figuring out where we're going with this. And I don't know how we got all the way here from MK Ultra, but it makes sense.
It does make sense, because it's all about your mind, and what you think is how you behave, and how you behave is what you create. So if we're being controlled at the very foundation of our government, then what we're behaving now and then what we're creating are those things. So we're creating basically what they want.
Right. But
does that make sense?
Yeah. And you know, one thing is maybe we give too much credit for all these things to our government. Maybe it has nothing to do with our government. Our government is tasked with keeping our country a country.
Mm-hmm.
And there's corruption within those levels of government, and some bad people, a lot of good people working hard. But is it more about the government or profit? I mean, if you go back to the mango and the water, that guy talking about that might be a perfectly good family man telling his tribe that we need more mangoes and water. He might take care of his tribe, his family. He might be the religious leader in this tribe. But he also might be the guy that sells water and mangoes, and he's running out. So it might be more profitable for him to convince his tribe that the other tribe is going to survive and theirs isn't. And somewhere along that, it's about him making a living, keeping his family strong and prosperous, which is what
purely for his own gain.
Right. And we all want our families to be strong and prosperous. So I'm not making excuses for that guy, but I'm also saying that's maybe the government's too big. Maybe it's just a bunch of people trying to make their families succeed now and into the future and forever.
I think that there's, to some degree, that's true.
Right.
That's the majority, I think. But I think there's some that may have a more hidden agenda.
Be a little bit more sinister than that? Or do we just need...
To some degree.
Do we need to think there's somebody or some person or group that is
maybe
controlling all that, when all they're doing is just making a profit? And it's just as bad. It's just as bad when you're harming so many people to make a profit.
Well, and I think it's all really mind control, because it all really goes back to the very topic that we were talking about. So if we talk, like, kind of going back a little bit to the old podcast that we just did previously about us being the creators of our environment. If you understand that you have this group of people that create and they can make something happen, and you have the control of them, you see what I'm saying? You're controlling what they create. So by brainwashing them to create what you want, then the outcome is what they want.
Right.
Does that make sense?
That does make sense. And sometimes we believe what we want is what's best for everybody.
Right. And we think, oh my gosh, I'm just doing this for the good. I'm doing this because, you know, I hate to bring religion into it all the time, but, you know, it's God wants me to do it. It's the best for everyone. Sometimes we just impede in people's progress and their experience because we know what's best for everyone else.
Right, right.
And I don't know that that's always the case.
I think we've all been there. But then sometimes we realize that, you know what, I'm just an idiot. I may think I know what's right for everybody, but half the time I don't even know what's right for myself. And maybe that's a healthier way of looking at it.
And I think that's profound, though. I think if more people looked at it like that, then we'd all be a little better off.
We'd probably leave our neighbors alone, and they could eat their mangoes, and we could have our papayas, whatever it is.
Papayas.
We could learn to live with our papayas.
You bring in as the parent, and what you want is best for your children.
College. And then you become a doctor.
Right. And so then we're still doing it, whether or not we're doing it for our neighbor. We as parents then do that to our children, who do it to their children, and then these cycles just continue and continue. We are not just a subservient race. We are self-subservient, if that makes any sense, where we are our own manipulator because we're already brainwashed. Nobody needs to manipulate us. We do a great job of doing it to ourselves.
Don't you think maybe we had to be that way to survive millions of years? Or thousands, and if you go in some religious history, I mean, we need to be like that to continue to survive, because it's not easy to survive on this earth even now, and it's a lot easier now than it ever has been. We need to have that part of our brain that's always going to push to improve our situation and improve our children's situation.
Mm-hmm.
A good example, I just read an article about how after the plague, the Black Death in the Middle Ages,
mm-hmm.
we became a stronger group, or humans became stronger in the areas hit by that.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes sense. There's a sort of
a cleansing, even though we don't really like to see it that way, because I know it was really horrible and a lot of people died. But there is a certain amount of cleansing that the earth will do, just like with fires and everything else. Plagues tend to be a sense of cleansing.
Right. And the studies on that are in its infancy, but they're talking about it could have been something as simple as the weakest people died from the plague.
Mm-hmm.
So the stronger people tended to survive. So their offspring, we're going to be stronger.
Mm-hmm.
That's one theory that the scientists were looking at. But they're talking about a bunch of different factors that they're just now starting to look at. And another thing is, and this is, if you study areas where there's been famine, and we can study this up, you know, to now. There's plenty of places in this world that have famine now.
Right.
What they find is the children of those famine survivors live longer on average. Their DNA, their genetics become stronger, and that they're studying that to figure out how that can happen. So that just kind of, it's a little bit off track, but I think our brains are set up the same way to become stronger, to survive. Fear helps us survive to a certain level, but we don't get to express what we need to express through fear and physical exertion. Maybe we need a roller coaster a day trip or something like that, you know, to get that, those fear.
Adrenaline.
Yeah. And that, I think that helps us, and that burns it off, because then we don't turn that fear toward our neighbors or that anger toward ourselves, which would lead to depression after a while and a lot of other issues. I think
that's true.
Somehow our perfect body, or the way we're built as humans to make us survive, is getting short-circuited because somebody's using fear to control our minds.
And we're impeding the progress, I think. And this isn't going to come out right, but when you send rice to the starving millions in Ethiopia, you know, you tend to impede the progress of what you're talking about. And that sounds horrible, because you're like, oh my gosh, you're going to deprive them of food and da-da-da. Well, a lot of people say that when you send food over there, then they don't get up and move to another place, or they don't find the resources to be able to survive on their own. You're enabling a situation that is, if you allow it to progress naturally, will actually have a stronger outcome.
That sounds like that sounds very conservative. Like, don't help people that are down on their luck, because they need to help themselves. So, but I'm giving you a hard time on that, because I know what you're saying.
No, in a way, it's kind of true.
But
it's the whole give a fish, teach to fish thing.
And I think it's okay. And I think we need to feed famine victims rice if we have it.
I don't think it's a problem.
I think we have to do it, but We have to do more.
That's what I'm saying. So it's fine to hand them a sandwich, but let's figure out a way to help them be more self-reliant.
And some of it may be paying a lot of money to move them to an area that is not arid or that is not choked by a drought. But where's the profit in that?
That's what I'm saying. So nobody's really doing this to really help the situation. You know, these whole humanity efforts, a lot of times they don't get to where they're going anyway. And if they do, it's not really helping the people. And right. If it is, it's helping them for a day. It's not really helping the problem. What we need to do is see it for what it is.
But by saying that, I would say we also need to point out we need to keep feeding those people. Even though it may not save them in the long run, it may not save all of them, all it takes is to save one or two of those people and that they might grow up, get a college education, or get some kind of life education to where they can turn that around and save their family, and their family can save their people. So I think it's one of those things where we have to do it. Charity is a great thing, but we have to take it to the next level. Charity and an education, some kind of education, and a little bit more to keep, I guess, to keep the process going, because just feeding somebody gives them another day or two. But
the education is key.
Yeah, and it's too
easy. Let's teach them how to build the resources, to get the resources, to go where there are the resources. Let's teach them that, as opposed to just throwing money at the problem, which is what we tend to do, which our government tends to do about everything. Right. They don't ever get to the heart of the problem. And we've talked about with healthcare, you talk about in our education system, throw money at the problem. You're not fixing the problem that way.
Right. And you'll see throughout history that's been an issue, not just with our government. The only groups that would go into these areas and try to solve the problem would do so as long as you worship their God.
Well, and see, and that's exactly it. And they're doing that for the betterment of humanity. They're only trying to save your soul.
Right, and I believe most of those people were actually doing it. They were
they believed it, yeah.
Yeah, they were actually trying to do it for the right reasons in their mind. I mean, they were trying to save fellow humans. In some places, I guess, what is it? What would they call them? The
missionaries?
Yeah, but they were trying to save the heathens.
Oh, right. Uh-huh.
So,
the pagans?
Yeah, they'll take the word of their God along with some food and some education that is based on, you know.
It's proven technique that they actually did. Would feed people. Nobody wanted to listen to preaching or God or Bible or anything. But when they offered food, then people would show up.
Yeah.
This is actually how they got people in. You talk about the daily bread and how people get food and wine at every single mass. This is the reason why they do that, because they actually used to do that. They would distribute food to every single person who showed up so that they would listen to their teachings. It was a complete indoctrination, or they would do it through some sort of parade. But either way, it was the only way they could draw a crowd. Otherwise, people were in the farms. They didn't care. They didn't have time for that. Nobody got time for that.
Yeah, if they're working hard to make their life, they don't have time for that. Or
they're not going to be coming over to philosophize.
Or if they were already rich, or maybe not rich but well off.
Mm-hmm.
Any of our listeners don't think we're picking on Christianity. I mean, you see this right now in the madrasas, that you know, in the Islamic madrasas, the parents that want the best for their sons, mm-hmm. send them to. They can't afford where they live. There's not a school that they can afford to send their child to. So they will send them to a madrasa that not only teaches their child, feeds them, clothes them, protects them.
But, so you're just doing the best for your children.
Right. But in the end, some of those children will grow up and not always be socially acceptable, and it'll be okay to bring their word of God down upon others, the unbelievers. Which goes back to, as we're saying, mind control. Mind control doesn't have to be this big government devious planned program. It's always been a part of the human experience, I think. on one level or another.
There's always manipulation, mm-hmm. whether it's parent, child, spouse, brothers and sisters. I mean, everybody's manipulating for their own little agenda.
Right. And maybe the question is, what's that person that's talking to you and giving you these ideas? Maybe the question you need to ask is, what's in it for that person? Because sometimes we can't tell who's good or bad, who's trying to control us mentally or not. So you really got to just make it basic and not play into it.
Well, and then it's also how we perceive the information, because somebody can say something to you like, oh, you look nice today. And then you can take that a couple ways. You can say, oh, wow, great, I look nice today. You can say, well, I don't look nice every other day.
Right.
You know, there's ways that we take in the information. What people are saying is really irrelevant. It's what we do with the information. It's what we do with the information from television and media. That makes the difference. And why are we thinking it that way? Why are we processing the information in such a way?
Now, are we stacking all these problems on top of each other to where the next little problem comes along and will set us down a path
mm-hmm.
that damages exactly. ourselves and might lead to the damage of others if we play into it too much?
So once again, we got to do the work internally. You do the work internally, then you're unaffected by whatever anybody's telling you.
Right. Are you unaffected, or are you just strong? Do you have that little shield to protect you in your weaker moments?
It's my bubble. Well, no, everybody's affected to a degree, I think.
Yeah.
But how do you let it continue to fester? Or right. can you say, okay, that's interesting. And you let it kind of roll. Or maybe it does kind of affect you, but then you move on. Or do you become so incensed that you grab your sign and you start picketing and you go out? How do we react to the information? That's the key.
Right, right. And is violence involved?
And is violence involved? Is it such a cause that you have to actually harm another human being to make it right? And if that's the case, then you might want to rethink what you're behind.
Yeah. Ask more questions or demand a little bit more evidence and get your evidence from more than one place, because they've been talking about it for years, what the television has done to us and what it does to us daily. And you know, we get dumbed down with reality TV. We get stressed out with the news. We get distracted with sports. All kinds of things.
Well, there's a certain sense of, there's a kinesiology type method that you can actually use to determine truth from false or the validity of the information. And if we could just sort of hone in on those skills, then I think we'd all be a little better off, that we can determine when we're being lied to or when we're being manipulated, at least to some degree.
I think that's asking a lot, though. That seems really difficult.
I think it's something that we innately have. It's a gift that you were already given. It's just a matter of working it out. It's just like any other muscle or tuning into your dreams or anything else. The more you work on it a little bit, it is a little bit of work, you know, but
I think we always talk about this on the podcast. It's work.
It is a little bit of work.
But work isn't necessarily a bad thing. You know, sure, we want to sleep in sometimes, but if we sleep in too much, we feel really unfulfilled and we don't feel like we need to work. And
I don't know. Sometimes I think you can do a lot of work in your dreams.
That's just me. Maybe some of it's good. You know, some of it's bad. I've had bad dreams with enemy hockey players, and I don't see any benefit to that.
You may not see the benefit now, but there's a reason.
Maybe I'm trying to be taught that this player isn't quite such a childish idiot.
I spoke to a guy one time who was a shaman, a dream expert type shaman, and he said basically when you think about the dreams, don't really think about the players involved and don't think about the situation so much as the emotion that it evokes. So that when you wake up from a dream and you say, oh my gosh, this was crazy, try not to think about the actual circumstances so much as how did you feel? And then if you get to that point, then you can determine what the dream was really trying to tell you.
I could see that to a certain extent, but maybe aren't some people believe that dreams are just ways of storing memories?
Yeah, those people are stupid.
But they're neuroscientists. Or how could they be stupid?
Because they're dumb. No neuroscientist. Show me a neuroscientist that says it's just a way of storing memories. Because it's not true. It can't be because you're acting. Your brain is completely active and it's creating new things. It's not just memories. You don't have necessarily dreams of memories. How often have you had a dream of an exact memory?
Yeah,
Do you know what I mean?
I don't have them very often.
It may be reminiscent of something like an old house, but that old house is not the same situation. Or there's always something a little different. Because that old house evokes a certain emotion in you, whether it's, you know, being sad or just reminiscing, or maybe it represents a certain person in your life. We can get into crazy stuff about your dreams, but there's even, there's ways of controlling your dreams. I mean, I've done it. Lucid dreaming is amazing. If you can actually go to sleep and wake up in your dreams and control what's going on in your dreams, and you can tell me that that's just a storage of memories, then I say that's hogwash.
I would say I probably experienced lucid dreaming a couple times, but I can't do it on command like some people can.
I used to be pretty good at it.
Yeah,
I used to be able to do it on a nightly basis.
I think I could do it if I practiced a little bit more, but
you got to have a lot of sleep. Typically, the best lucid dreams come after 8 hours of sleep, and since I used to sleep about 13, it worked really good.
I don't think I've had 8 hours of sleep in months.
And that's why most people don't really get into the deep, deep part of their dreams. Because you do have to sleep a lot. But after having kids, then you just don't do that anymore.
Maybe as we age, we get to a place where we can start lucid dreaming again. And mm-hmm. we have a better perspective because we don't. As we age, we tend to look at things like, oh, that doesn't really matter. I don't care.
It's true. We tend to care less about what other people think, or at least that's me anyway.
I think I'm the same way, and it's a great thing. And
I do too. It's fun.
Yeah.
It's more. It's honestly, it's a weight off your shoulders.
And this is when we should be less our mind should be less controlled, but we are.
Free thinkers, and then we can go out there and go on like a podcast and start telling people about it.
Yeah, and saying, "Hey, don't listen to us." I mean, listen to us, but don't believe our word as the gospel. Go out and figure it out for yourself.
It is the gospel.
I'm pretty impressed with our words, but you know
that. Well, we've gotten a little wordy today, haven't we?
We have. I guess we could probably wrap it up saying that we haven't really gone beyond. Well, we did go beyond the conspiracy of the week, and it went into mind control.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty enlightening in just the way it happened. And I think I feel like I'm not quite so controlled. Or are we?
It could be all the information that we're presenting as being the alternative information is exactly the information that they want to present out there, and that we're just being the little puppets presenting it.
Right.
That could be.
And I would say whoever they are, maybe it's not as much that we focus on they as we focus mm-hmm. on us.
Very good.
So look at ourselves.
Like the Oracle of Delphi, know thyself.
Exactly. So I guess that's where we can leave everybody today. Just if you're interested in this stuff, check out Facebook and Twitter, and we'll try to post some links to where you can kind of do your own research. And
we're always trying to learn, too. So if there's something out there that you want us to research or you want to tell us about, we'd love to hear it, too.
Yes, and you might hear us talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll sign off for now, and you'll hear from us again.
Oh, gee. I swear I love you guys. What's this? This is Katie Nelson and this Christian Tarnak guy. Oh, my. They're so full of it. Talking shit hockey. Is talking shit hockey is right, without the hockey, and more of the talking, or less of the talking. Oh, anyway, find us on the interwebs and Facebook and Twitter.